Hey, what's going on? It is Tuesday, I think. It's the Raptors show. It's Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner. Raptors win 112-104 against the Washington Wizards. Some fun stuff around the NBA last night. Some not fun stuff on the women's side of March Madness as Juju Watkins tore her ACL in a USC win. That's obviously a big bummer for the rest of that tournament and for next season for Juju. That sucks. Raptors game was fun enough. They win by 8 at Washington despite, you know, the minutes load and the closing lineups looking how we've come to expect. But when you play against the Washington Wizards and they can counter your Orlando Robinson and Colin Castleton as a 4-5 with, hey, here's Jalen Martin. And, you know, actually, I was going to say JT Thor. JT Thor actually had a pretty fun game. But yeah, Raptors win. The Wizards are in dead last for a reason.
JT Thor, all name team, too.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my G League guys. Cool. I don't know if he's an NBA guy, but cool G League player. Okay, we went long on an interview with Garrett earlier today. We have Jeremy Wu of ESPN to talk March Madness and prospects and things like that in the second half of the show. But we went so long with Garrett. It was a really fun chat, so we're just going to get right into that. Here's our chat with Garrett Temple from earlier today. All right, joined now by Garrett Temple. Garrett, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, Blake. What's up, man?
What was your sleep score last night?
My sleep score, you know what? I need to look at my Whoop. I need to look at it right now. It probably wasn't great.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it.
Sleep score. Wow. Yeah. Sleep score with the baby getting here. Nah, it wasn't great. You know, Blake, the shirt you have on, is that a Big League Chew shirt?
It's like a take on Big League Chew. So baseball starts with my other show. I get away from Matt for a couple days here to do baseball stuff. So, yeah, just getting in the baseball spirit.
Okay. Gotcha.
The best, just pure sugar.
Yeah.
Can't beat it.
Yeah.
I used to be able to chew a whole pouch of that in one Little League game.
Yeah, it's cool. And you get to, like, have the chunk in the side of your mouth so it looks like you got a big wad of tobacco. Although, obviously, we don't want to do the wad of tobacco
Dykstra.
Now. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Now they have, like, everyone cheats and they have, this is too inside baseball, but they have, like, little pouches that you can just put in now so you don't have to have, like, raw tobacco in there for the players. Called Zins a lot of the time, yeah.
That sounds like a Southern thing.
Yeah.
So you don't mess up your gums?
I guess so. I don't do it. I had braces for too long. I'm not going to risk anything that messes up my teeth or my gums. But
I'm just not addicted to nicotine, so.
Yeah. You get in a softball league here in Toronto, Matt. You never know. All right, Garrett, so you guys got into played in Washington last night, get into New York late last night. Yes, the sleep schedule. Wanted to ask you, too. You have an off day in New York. You are a part of the players' union. How are you going to the MBPA offices today? Do you do some union stuff while you're in town?
It depends. I may pass by today. Obviously, if we were in the middle of negotiations, CBA negotiations, I definitely would. I feel like we've been in New York, you know, three times over the last month and a half. We went to the PA. We practiced there the first time, and we had a meeting there the second time. So I was able to get there twice. So I may stop by today, but we're going to see Hamilton tonight, a couple of us. So excited about that for sure.
Great play. So the headquarters for the MBPA, I believe it or not, I haven't been there. I obviously went when it was the old one up in Harlem. Didn't they build like a workout space for players to be able to work out when they come through New York?
Yeah, it's a beautiful gym. It's short. The court is short, so
perfect for me.
Likened to the where you see those Black Ops runs and stuff. A lot of obviously New York, not as much space, and then they have a great weight room on another level, locker room, showers. It's really high end. What they've been able to do there.
Are retired players allowed to go work out there if we're in town?
I would imagine so. I don't think you'd have a problem with it, Matt.
Yeah. How much service time? How many years of service?
All right. Yeah. 3 years. You got to be vested.
I have full insurance. I'm good.
Yeah. You're good. I just mean in general.
Yep. You know?
Some of these 10 days maybe can't go in the off season.
Garrett has like double full insurance. He's been in the league over 20 years. That's unheard of.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that's you're trying to make an age joke, but you get a 20 year pension. Like, My dad in the factory life, he was looking at that date on the calendar, you know? So
so in ours, 10 years and 17 is the same thing, Blake. So
yeah. I figured as much.
And
yeah,
we don't even have to deal with the black lung, you know?
This is I'm going to go too
just in. Bad knees.
I'm going to go too inside again. But like, so a former Major League Baseball player showed me on his phone one time, the MLBPA Retire Players app, and he can do all his stuff in there. And like, you can do your like calculator for how much pension you get and stuff like that. Do you guys have things like that for MLBPA Retire Players as well?
Yeah, we have that. I would unfortunately say that probably 10% of the guys know that we have it or know how to use it, but we definitely have just different logins for all the different, you know, benefits that we get post-career, whether it's the post-career benefit plan, like the gap in the gap plan, that the one thing, one of the few things I should say Billy Hunter did, you know, at the end of his tenure, that was good. Obviously our pension and then our 401k. So we have different ability, different logins for each of those. Our app usually is just used when people need to get their license and money. You have to go in and make sure the money is being sent to the correct account. But other than that, people don't really utilize the online portion as much.
Yeah, we also get supplemental health to kick in for things that insurance doesn't cover for healthcare. However, due to that health, the scandal where like a bunch of former players went to jail, now like it's such a pain in the butt to use this service. Like there's so much paperwork and like steps. They've ruined it for everybody.
Yeah, we won't name names, but if you Google that, you can find out pretty quick who's in jail and who's
before who's it was like easy, like you just you know, get it and it's no problem. Now it's like you got to like give a DNA sample to get the money out to pay for your copay for your kid to get their sore throat checked. Like it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's very true. I've had a couple of them. I played with a couple of those guys. It was tough to see.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Speaking of kids, Garrett, how has being on the road since the babies come been? Like, I take it you probably get up pretty early, FaceTime with the kids, but you get a little more sleep?
Yes, definitely get a little more sleep. Because when I'm home, I make it a point to, you know, be the night nurse because I have a chance to get on the road and get some extra sleep. So I'm the one waking up, bringing the baby to my wife so she can feed her. And then, you know, And I have a great ability to fall asleep at the drop of a dime. So I'll go get her and bring her back. And I'm like, okay, let me know. And then 20 minutes later, my wife will wake me up and I'll be able to, you know, go back, put her in the bed and go back to sleep like within 2 minutes. So, and my daughter's been sleeping on three and a half, 4 hour stretches, you know, sometimes five at night. So we're getting lucky right now.
That's pretty good. I feel like that power, once you have kids, never goes away. Like, I haven't seen a kids movie in 15 years. Every time we go to the movies to watch, like, The Little Mermaid 2, opening credits, I'm out. And then closing credits, they're waking me up. Exactly.
I feel like movies, that's...
Especially Disney too much. I'll actually just watch the movie.
Okay.
It's hard for me to go to sleep on a movie.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like this is like I'm a bad sleeper. Like I can't sleep on planes or whatever. But
just
I tell
the kid, Blake.
I feel like this is a pro athlete thing too, though. Like you guys just have to get conditioned to be able to get your sleep in where you can sleep on a plane when you're flying. I guess Washington to New York's a short one, but in general, you guys are better conditioned to just you got to get it in where you can.
I guess that's true. I mean, this year, you know, sometimes I play cards on the plane some years, so I don't get any sleep on the. You know, but then you have guys like B.I. sleeps right when he gets on the plane. If Chris Boucher is not playing cards, he's going to sleep the entire flight. Like the entire flight back from where we come back from, Golden State, slept all 4.5 hours in the middle of the day. So, like, everybody's different. And I could do that if I wanted. So,
I can't sleep on a plane. For some reason, my arms fall asleep after, like, 10 minutes.
And you're gonna get like compression
and
socks,
even on the Spurs, yeah, compression arm sleeves.
Yeah.
But even on the Spurs, and Garrett will tell you about this, like if I did manage to fall asleep, I'm waking up with like something like paper in my mouth or something from Manu.
Yeah.
Like someone's messing with you every time.
Are
you getting,
sure.
They're taking, Richard Jefferson's taking pictures of you. Like, so like there's just no sleep on the plane for me.
Stuff. Garrett, with respect to cards, you guys have such a young team. Have you had to like teach Bure and other games like that to the young guys, or they come in ready to go?
No, yeah, we definitely have to. We had to teach Bure, and you're kind of, you know, skeptical about actually teaching it because you don't want the young guys to try to say, okay, we'll play. But Jamal Shea played a little bit for a little while, and then he was like, nah, I'm straight. But now we're playing, they're playing Uno.
Okay.
So B.I., Jamal, AJ Lawson. Jameson battled a little bit. Chris Boucher, they're playing Uno. And, yeah, so I don't even sit at the table anymore. I just sit next to the table now. I let B.I. take that seat. Because Uno is one game that I just never really got into.
It's how you know you got a young team, that it went from Boo to Uno.
Uno could get contentious because, like, they have the rule, if you have a card, you have to play it. But obviously, if you can save your wild cards till the end, when you have Uno, you automatically will win. So you got to, like, catch someone that's trying to cheat.
Do you guys? So that's kind of like, that's like you could, you know, renege or boo somebody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Interesting.
You got to keep an eye on guys.
All right.
Especially if money's on the line. I'm guessing you're not playing for fun.
No, they're not playing for fun.
No. We won't reveal any specifics of that. Okay. I guess we should talk a little bit of basketball. Gary, you guys won last night. You beat the Wizards. Look, that's a team that's in a similar situation to you guys are, but, you know, with even less going on there. What do you see from a game like that? Obviously, you know, the big thing is Jakob comes back after a couple games of rest. Then it's like, oh, this, yeah, if you play Jakob every game, you're not going to lose very much. You're going to win those minutes. Man, how do you contextualize just how good Jakob's been this year and the ability he steps on the floor after games and days off and just you guys win every time he's like win his minutes every single night?
Blake, you have been in my mind for the last like 15 hours.
How does your wife feel about that?
Bro, that's exactly what I was thinking as I'm watching the game unfold. He makes everything so easy. You know, I talked to David Aldridge last night after the game. And he asked me some questions about the league, who I think the MVP was, this and that. And then he asked me about underrated player. And I said Scotty. And then, you know, once you just asked me that question and once I thought about the game and how Jakob just makes everything so much easier for everybody, it's Jakob Poeltl, bro. He's the most underrated player in the NBA, in my opinion. Like, if you talk to our young guys, some of them didn't even know who Jakob was before they got drafted. And now they're like, he is so good. Like, how can he do the things that he does? I mean, his ability to hit the floater is elite. And he makes it so easy for Scotty or Quick. He moves. He knows where to move. When you plan it with younger bigs, you know, they have the mistakes that they're going to make, Matt, not know where to circle around the dunker and all of these different areas. Jakob is just in the right places all the time. And obviously defensively, he makes up for a lot of it on top of being able to be an elite rebounder. So shout out to Jakob, man. It's a reason why, you know, he's been on, you know, trade rumors. A lot of people want him, but Toronto is not letting him go. That's for sure.
Yeah. He definitely exposes younger players on a nightly basis. It's so fun watching it. Just to your point, by just understanding where to move in space and where the rotation is going to come from, where to get to get the dump down pass or get space. And you mentioned the floater. I've been half joking all season about how he's like the only 7-footer with a floater. And it makes sense. Like if you're 7 feet your whole life, you're like, go dunk the ball. But I feel like it's like a brave new world. Like you don't have to do that, especially the way NBA defenses play. There's that pocket, and if you catch it in the pocket, they're gonna hang back and guard 2-on-2. And if you can make that in between floater, it's there every single time. I'm wondering, do you think this is gonna be like other players, coaches, whoever is gonna watch Jakob and be like, man, maybe I should add that to my game. He makes it look so easy, makes it every single time. Like, is this going to be a trend moving forward? We're going to see more 7-footers with floaters?
No question. You know, Colin Castleton has a good floater, Orlando Robinson. And the thing is, Jakob is not unathletic by any means. He's actually he's much more athletic than you would imagine. He's the most athletic big on our team right now. You saw what he did in Portland. He has the ability to dunk on people, but you know, this is it allows him to get hit a lot less. He doesn't have to worry about, I think with Yacht, you know, it may have been a situation where he wasn't a great free throw shooter early on, so going in to try to finish hard, getting fouled, going to the line, maybe that has something to do with it. I've never asked him, but his ability to make that floater definitely changes the way defenses are able to play. And that's the first thing I said when I came here. I said, bro, when I was in New Orleans, you used to kill us with that floater, man. I'm glad I don't have to defend it anymore. That I'm not the low man trying to either take the big or my guy in the corner.
Because what are you going to do? It's not like you're going to contest that against a guy who's a little over 7 feet tall is releasing it from up here.
It's perfect the way every NBA guard's pick and rolls.
Yeah.
It's like the perfect shot.
Perfect.
So when we look ahead to next year and what things will look like, Garrett, so Jakob has, in 8 games in a row that he's actually played in, you guys have won his minutes. He's been a positive plus minus, and, you know, single game plus minus doesn't mean all that much all the time. But when you get a pattern like that, it's every time Yak's on the floor, you guys are winning your minutes. And obviously he hasn't been playing, you know, there's nights he plays 18 minutes. There's nights he gets rest and things like that. Obviously Brandon Ingram, whoever you guys get in the draft, those would be big components. But how much of a factor is Jakob Poeltl when you guys look and say, hey, we can be good again next year. We could be a playoff team again next year when we're, you know, putting everything into winning. How big a part of that is Jakob Poeltl?
As big a part as anybody else, if not the biggest part. You know, having an anchor down low changes the game. Having somebody that can be a pressure release, having somebody that, you know, especially the way that our point guard plays, the way they quick plays, he loves playing off the ball, kind of a get actions. But having somebody that, you know, when a guy like Scotty that loves to pass, B.I. is a really good passer as well. And having a center that can catch, has great hands, and can get you extra possessions. I mean, his, you know, you can't overstate his importance to our team. And, I wish you could see how Jacoby Walton looks every time Yacht does something that he's been doing the whole season. He's like, gee, he's just so good. So, he's very, very important to our team.
How, speaking of Jacoby, how has he been in terms of soaking everything up? I know he was dealing with the hip and groin thing, but I've talked to a couple assistants who have kind of raved about how quickly he's picking things like scheme up and learning the NBA game. Are you seeing that too as one of his vets?
No question. You know, there was a game where he jumped on somebody's pump fake. And I think we played the team. We played somebody, you know, maybe 2 days later. And one guy on the team was a great big time pump fake guy. And Cole didn't jump once. But just being able to, understand his mistakes and not do them again is difficult for a 19, 20 year old. He's understanding schemes, as you said. Defensively, he's gotten better, much better. And his competitiveness has stayed the same, his drive. So on top of just being able to pick things up, his confidence on both ends of the court has grown as well.
That's great. That's great to hear. It's nice to see him back out there. Obviously, Garrett, I wanted to ask you, I wanted to pivot a little bit off of you guys and talk larger NBA stuff. So Eric Green of The Athletic, you mentioned David Aldridge, one of the GOATs, also at The Athletic. But Eric Green, the opposite of the GOAT. But he asked you about your thoughts on the tanking around the NBA the other day. And, you know, it was a very thoughtful response that only one part of it got aggregated, of course. So given a little bit more space here, how do you feel about, like, when you look around the NBA right now and there are multiple teams that are, you know, resting guys and focusing on the draft and things like that? I know the quote that got aggregated was more about...
It was the headline. Temple rips fans. Blah. You didn't rip anybody.
No.
Like, it was ridiculous.
Just said that you yourself couldn't cheer to lose a game.
Yeah, and
right?
It was really frustrating for me to see that headline and then read the quote and then go and see the whole. It's like, what are they doing?
Yeah. That's a social media thing.
I appreciate that, Matt. I haven't even seen it, so that's how much I'm on social media.
That's a good thing because it's ridiculous.
Basically, you gave Kareem a really thoughtful answer about, you know, that kind of discomfort of like, yeah, knowing the team you're cheering for would be better off long term with a high draft pick, but you don't want to cheer to lose. You're too competitive and you couldn't do that as a fan. And then it got on social media, like Garrett Temple calls fans cheering for losses a BS right. or something like that.
And then
like
they
that,
trimmed but. It down to like the only part of the quote that kind of backs that up, but not even really.
Which love to see that happen to Kareem in his article. Don't like to see it happen to you. You had an idea in there as well. Eric asked you about, you know, a way the league could resolve this. How much is this on the radar for you guys in the NBPA or just you as a basketball fan that this is something the league's probably going to have to look at long term?
On the PA, it's not really, you know, on our radar. This is one of the things Matt will know. some things the NBA, they just do, and it's on them to figure out. Now, they can ask us for, like, advice, but this is a league, more of a league issue, not players, because every player that you know wants to play. Every player on our team wants to play, wants to fight, wants to win every game that they step on the court, and they want to play in every game. So I think this is something definitely on the league's radar. You know, it gets a lot of pub. It's getting a lot more pub. And the league has, honestly, in my opinion, done almost everything that they can in terms of the draft, kind of like, you know, flattening out the odds to where the first place doesn't get that much more of a chance than second, third, or fourth. But at the end of the day, you know, people, it's an analytics world, and the odds are the odds. So it's very understandable why teams long-term, if you're a team that wants to be better, why you want to go get the number one pick and have more of a chance to get the number one pick than be the fourth worst team. It's understandable from a business standpoint. On the other side, it's very understandable from a competitive standpoint, as a player playing, to say, I want to win every game. Like, we're four games back. I want to win. Miami Heat made it to the finals out of the play-in, or the eighth seed, whatever it was. So both sides, both things can be true. And I can understand a fan, you know, wanting their team 3 years from now to be able to have, you know, a draft pick that they got, and that they're having a better chance to, quote unquote, win because they have a little more talent. I think the way we're doing it, you know, we have such great habits that we've built. We have such a great foundation that Darko has built, and we've drafted so well. It's not easy, because guys can play, and we have competitive players that can really play. And it's, you know, we have a pretty good team. So that's the juxtaposition of the whole situation, in my opinion. And that's where it's at.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, they did the play-in tournament, and it allowed more teams to have relevancy for postseason action. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it kind of backfired where you flatten the odds, so you have four teams, maybe five teams that have, like, the best odds. To Garrett's point, yeah, they're not great odds, but still five teams. So now there's even more teams that are like, well, maybe we can get to the bottom five.
Basically,
it's
ironically,
caused more teams to tank somehow.
The play-in worked for the Western Conference and hurt the Eastern Conference, basically.
Yeah.
Because the West always has 10 or 11 good
teams.
But
I have the solution to this whole problem. It's really easy. We got you got an NBA A division and an NBA B division. You start a second NBA B division. You go to all the secondary markets that would love an NBA team: Montreal, Vancouver, Kansas City, Virginia Beach,
Vegas
and Seattle, I guess. You go to all these, Albuquerque, like, there's all these cities, Tampa, like, millions of people that you could have an NBA B division team, and then you do relegation. You do relegation. And like, it doesn't hurt anybody's money because, like, if you're a really good player and you're a free agent in the B division, an A division could sign you. Like, and now you're an NBA player. That way, if you're, like, the bottom two teams, you are doing everything you possibly can to win and avoid relegation. And then in the B division, the top two teams move up. And you create the kind of the European soccer model. It would be amazing.
The relegation works so well in Europe. I mean, that's the... But I don't know if we have the infrastructure. It'll take so long to be able to get that. One thing David Aldridge said last night, I said, what do you do about it? You know, he said, man, I would get rid of the draft. And I know the draft is, you know, so everybody loves the draft. All the purists, it's the draft. He said, but I would take the top 90 players, just like they take the top 25 in the green room that they, you know, talk to GMs. I'd take the top 90 players and put them in a room, and I'd have three tiers, tier 1 through 30, 31 through 60, 61 through 90. And everybody's like you recruit guys. And if you sign a tier one guy, you can't sign a tier one guy for the next 2 years. And I was like, wow. And he talked about, you know, the amount of money that they can make and things of that nature, the percentages. But he was like, that's what I would do. I was like, well, I've never really heard that that thing. I mean, the draft is the draft.
Okay.
Very tough to get the guys.
I like that. So if you're going to do that, the next thing you need to do, the NCAA needs to stop this sham of amateurism. And it's ridiculous. I read a thing, there's like 500 players in the transfer portal already. Players on teams that are still in the NCAA tournament are in the transfer portal for as soon as the season ends. All because the NCAA doesn't want to share any of the money. We've reached the point where now that's such big business. They're making billions of dollars off TV deals. It's time to call it what it is. Let the college players take the Power Five conferences, however you want to organize it, the schools that are revenue generating and want to be part of this, let them form a union, let them negotiate a CBA, and let's put rules in place so it's not the Wild West and just chaos in college basketball.
Nah, I definitely agree with that. It's something has to be done. Something has to be done. I agree. And it would help the teams. You know, right now players are on 1 year contracts. Players are on one. It's worse. It's harder than a pro team. At least a pro team, you sign a 3 or 4 year deal. In college, you're on a 1 year contract, maybe 6 months, because
if you're sharing the revenue, now you got the money to keep the players at the schools and put all the rules in place to prevent just what's going on right now. It's gross. I hate it. I don't think anyone likes it.
Me and you hate it, man. We were old school guys. Nah, I'm with you, Matty B.
All this money, it's time for the NCAA to share a little of it with the players so we can have some order. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's the thing. If you don't want players to have the freedom of movement like that, you have to make it worth their while. You can't say, hey, you got to stay here for 4 years no matter what. While, you know, like you've
coaches can do it.
Yeah. You've told stories about, you know, like you didn't have NIL money and there's so many rules around what you can and can't do and receive and things like that. Summer jobs, but
back then
the summer jobs were crazy. You couldn't get paid $20 an hour. You only could get paid.
It was illegal for me to speak at camps because I'm using my name, image and likeness to profit. I can't get $100 to go speak at this camp. No NCAA violation. You're ineligible. But back then, way back when me and Garrett played, the revenues were not what they are now. Yeah. It's way bigger business now.
They should have been sharing with you guys.
It was still a lot, but now it's like a ridiculous amount of money. Yeah. It is time to cut the players in on that and let's get some order.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great point. It's something that hopefully we can move toward. Garrett, we got to let you go. Thanks so much for doing this. Enjoy the day off. And enjoy Hamilton tonight.
Appreciate y'all, man.
Alexander Hamilton.
It's great. It's such a great show. I'm excited.
Tonight's lineup sings a little better than Matt.
You didn't like that? You haven't seen me dance.
It was decent.
Yeah, I can do all the dances,
I need your stool just in case it's too packed.
All right. Thanks,
there's
Garrett.
No leg room in those old theaters. Just warning you.
None. I know. All right. See y'all.
We'll see ya.
All right. Fun chat with Garrett, as always. Should be a fun night for them. Going to Hamilton. Matt, you were singing the whole 25 minutes we played that. I take it back. You have a lovely singing voice. You should be cast as 6'10" Hamilton.
Yeah. Coach Pop took the Spurs to the original cast opening run at Broadway. We had Boban Marjanovic. Could not fit in the seats. He had to sit in the section. I don't know what the politically correct term for it nowadays is.
The mezzanine?
Yeah. We'll call it the mezzanine.
Sure. Okay, I didn't know there was an unpolitically correct term for it.
You know what I'm saying.
We'll talk about that during the break. When we come back, we'll talk to Jeremy Wu of ESPN. We'll get the lowdown on the latest risers and fallers from that opening weekend of NCAA tournament as far as the NBA draft's concerned. They've got a new top 100 up at ESPN this morning, so great timing to have Jeremy on. That's next as the Wrap the Show continues with Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptor Show. Some Attitude Era impressions going on in the commercial break. We're getting to the point this season where you probably do those on air and get away with it. For this segment, though, we have lots to talk about. Jeremy Wu and Jonathan Givony have a new top 100 up at ESPN, risers and fallers from the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament. The Toronto Raptors, of course, as things currently stand, would have the 7th best odds at the number one pick and would likely pick in the top 10. Let's go through it. Let's talk to Jeremy Wu of ESPN. What's up, man? Thanks for doing this.
Hey, how are you guys?
Excellent, man. Matt, your mic is not on. Jeremy,
classic.
Great to see you. I guess before we get into the prospect stuff, how was opening weekend for you? Because I know you've got to cover everything, but you were also, I think, in Milwaukee for the games. How did you balance everything that opening week?
Yeah, it's always a little bit of a – I guess it kind of depends where the sites are, but it's always a challenge because, like, you want to be at the games. Then you kind of appreciate the fan aspect of, like, this is, you know, my favorite weekend of the year as a kid. Like, I still want to watch all the games at home. So it's balancing both. So I went to Milwaukee for the first day. I saw 4 games, and I hung back to kind of watch over the weekend. But it's just nonstop. Like, you're just trying to, you know, watch as much as you can. Gavoni is a film monster, so he's always outpacing me on the tape. So I'm just trying to keep up with him. But it's just a lot to take in, a lot of good players, a lot of good basketball. So it's quite a bit of fun.
So the big article, risers and fallers in the first 2 rounds of the NCAA tournament, who are some risers?
Yeah, I think some of the bigger names right now, if we're just looking at like the top of the draft, like I think Jeremiah Fears is one that sticks out to me from Oklahoma, who, you know, teams have been asking me about him for a few months, and I've been kind of coming around on him, and they lost to UConn, but I think he kind of had it on display. Just sort of the craftiness, his competitiveness. He's gotten a lot better over the course of the year. That's one thing with really young players. Like, I think it matters more where they are, you know, in February and March. So to see guys perform on a big stage like that's always great. I think Derek Queen also with his moment for Maryland hitting that game winner, I think pretty big time for him. So excited to see him play in this second weekend.
So you mentioned that, you know, for a guy like Jeremiah Fears who comes in, I think he's one of the youngest players in all of college basketball. You know, he's still 18. So that improvement over the course of the year matters, and how he looks right now really matters. I'm sure teams are looking at, you know, what I guess we'll call developmental capacity. How much can this guy keep improving? Does he show that ability to improve and learn as he goes? How do you, when you're evaluating these guys, balance that, hey, you want to see these guys looking a little better this time of year versus we've got 30 games of sample saying, you know, this is what, I don't know, Trey Johnson is, and then this is what he looked like this weekend. Like, how do you balance that out when you're evaluating guys?
It's really case by case. I think teams will tell you the same thing. Like, it's hard to wait. You don't want to weight any one thing too much heavier than the other, but there is a lot of recency bias that happens with the draft every year, and we see it. And I think no one's totally immune to that. Like, if you see a guy play well in a big game, like, you want to say, oh, this guy's a gamer. You know, it may or may not be true. It might just be the best game of his life. But I think as human, that's kind of how we think sometimes. So it's just sort of, I think a lot of evaluation is just like self-awareness of, like, you know, where am I maybe overstepping with how I'm looking at this? But I think that's one trend with this draft overall, is a lot of the guys, particularly in the lottery, are very young. We're looking at a lot of freshmen. After last year, which was kind of a weird class with, you know, guys who were in school because of COVID and stayed longer, and older guys and international guys, this is a little bit more of a traditional class in that respect. So, and that's one thing I think teams are excited about too, is being able to get someone who is younger with more, you know, feasible upside left, what have you, if you're drafting in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned there are a lot of freshmen, like all the big names you hear at the top of the draft are freshmen. Is there anyone who's not a freshman who has a chance to go pretty high?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at our board, I mean, it's kind of an interesting year in that way. I mean, we've got some international guys who are further down. I think Colin Murray-Boyles is our highest ranked from South Carolina. He's our highest ranked non-freshman in the NCAA ranks, and he didn't even make the tournament, which – I wouldn't hold against him because I think he's a very good player, and, you know, their team didn't have a ton of help, but yeah, would have been nice to see him playing in March. But you know, then after that, it's, you know, Danny Wolf from Michigan, and I'm just glancing at our top 100 now, and we only have a handful of guys who aren't freshmen.
That's wild.
I know. So again, it's going to be interesting because some of these guys will end up going back to school, not the very top guys, but like I think with NIL. With more resources, and it's more attractive to go back and develop in school and make more money than you would if you're a fringe first round pick. We'll see how the draft kind of thins out between now and May. I think that's going to be another sort of interesting storyline, is how the transfer portal and the NIL and the draft kind of like work together to sort of determine who is actually in the class.
You mentioned Danny Wolf there as one of the overclassmen who ranked as a first-round draft grade for you guys. Caught some of the Texas A&M game on Saturday, and he was unbelievable. 14-9 and 4 with three blocks. And I know you guys had written him up. You and Jonathan had that piece heading into the tournament, 50 prospects to watch in Madness, and called him maybe college basketball's most unique player. What makes Danny Wolf special? Why is he on the radar as a potential late first-round guy?
Yeah, he's interesting. I've gone to see him a few times, and he's interesting just, being a seven-footer, but also really being more functionally a wing. He's very comfortable playing on the perimeter, very good passer. He takes a lot of risks. I think some of it is sort of by design because their guard play isn't the strength of that team. So we've really needed him to create offense. There have been moments where he's kind of the de facto point guard for that team, and he's running pick and roll with their other seven-footer, Vlad Golden, who's like a guy who will probably be in the mix for a two-way contract. But I think just that versatility is interesting in the modern game. It's not going to be a fit for every single team. Like, not everyone's going to want to play that way. I think, you could flip it. Like, one of the knocks on him is he doesn't want to rebound sometimes, doesn't want to use his size, and create mismatches maybe the way that he could. But, again, it's 95% of players in the draft, we're going to scale them down into a smaller role in the NBA, right? They're going to become complementary players. So when you look at it from that perspective, having a guy that size who can pass, who will probably be able to make an open three, and just kind of sort of be an interesting piece, particularly if your coach is down with having a guy like that in a creative way, I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I knock him a little bit. He looks like the son from Righteous Gemstones. And that's anytime you look at a prospect and you can only see an actor, I'm like, I don't know about this one. Wanted to ask you this next prospect fell into the stock neutral or maybe even stock down from the weekend. But of the top names, the guy we've gotten to speak about the least on the show is probably Kasparis Yakushonis from Illinois. That's a team I'm locked in on in the tournament because Will Riley's from the same area as me. Obviously, they have Tomislav Ivicic as well, who's a potential draft pick. What did you see from Yakushonis over the course of the weekend, and where does his draft stock stand right now?
Yeah, so I was there for that first game. They were both pretty good in that game. The second game didn't go as well for Illinois, but I've been impressed with Yakushonis all season. I love his toughness. I think he can create shots. I think he kind of, there were times where he was pressing. There was a lot of pressure on him. He very quickly became the focal point of the scouting report for opposing teams. So when you're an 18-year-old coming over to the U.S. from Europe, he was at a high level in Europe, but this is his first time really playing, like heavy schedule against guys who are often a lot older than him. I think he did a good job. So you can look at his creativity, his feel at a very young age. I think with NBA spacing and better, more shooting around him, I think will look really good. And I've also been really impressed with Riley, by the way. He's been one of my favorite guys in the class.
Yes, so. We have Jamal. So I'm from the town right next to Kitchener. So we have Jamal Murray that will claim. But Will Riley actually played in Cambridge, the town next to Kitchener that I'm from, for a little bit. So we really need Will Riley to pop. These are the, we've had some like fourth line NHL guys come out of Cambridge, Ontario. We really need the Will Riley win. So that's good to hear. So with respect to Yakushonis, and this is related to, Edgecombe, Trey Johnson, Dylan Harper, who we've talked about, pretty guard, especially like potential combo guard heavy, in the same way that it is fairly freshman heavy. Where does Yegor Demin from BYU stand within that group? I know you guys have him 12th, so maybe a little bit below, a Fears, a Yakushonis, a Trey Johnson. But where could he play his way to in the lottery?
Yeah, I think he's in that mix. I think he had kind of been on, I would say, like uneven footing, I guess, the last month or so. I've talked to NBA folks who are a little concerned with the shooting and the defense and the fact that there are times BYU has had to kind of like hide him a little bit. But look, I mean, he's pretty athletic. He's 6'8". He's an excellent passer. I think he's really been kind of the a big engine for BYU, and it doesn't hurt that they're playing the second weekend, right? But I think he does a lot of things that are interesting in the modern NBA. The question is, like, do you view him as a full-time ball handler? I think based on what we've seen, like, with him creating one-on-one, it's probably not, like, a given. So if he's going to be off the ball, he's going to make shots. And so he's kind of in that sort of gray area with projection where it's like, is this guy going to shoot enough to be off the ball? Or are we going to have to, like, stick him on the ball and just figure it out and, like, you know, go with those growing pains, which are inevitable. So I think he's in the mix with those guys, sort of mid-late lottery. But it's really going to depend on who has the picks. I think I look at the draft. You've got Cooper Flagg. You've got Dylan Harper, probably is going to go number two. Ace Bailey, VJ Edgecombe, probably not falling too far. And then the next bucket is probably, you know, six to eight guys who could kind of go in a lot of different orders depending on, you know, how the draft falls and how the lottery shakes out. So I think Yegor's in that group. But he's going to have to shoot it well in workouts. I think if he can convince teams that he is going to make enough shots, it's going to help. And he's been pretty good, I think, the last couple of games for BYU. So,
who you got winning it? And are you going to the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games anywhere?
So I was debating going to Indianapolis, which is, you know, I live in Chicago, easy drive. But I've seen all those teams multiple times. So I was like, I'll just.
But Indianapolis is such a fun town.
It is. It's fun for events like this.
That's true. That is true.
Oh, it's good for events. No other reason in which I would drive there, but no, I'm just trying to get it.
But who you got winning it?
I think Duke. I just think they're the best team, like pound for pound. I think Cooper he's got it. Like I think he looks pretty healthy. I think he'll step up sort of in. That's the one thing he's missing is he hasn't had that one moment. Like I was talking to someone the other day. It's like the only thing he's done wrong this year is he slipped on the floor a couple times when he needed to score, like late in the game. So I think if I had to bet, it'd be Duke, but I can't bet. So,
is it weird for you guys to like obviously Cooper Flagg has been the presumptive number one all year. You guys had that great piece recently talking to a bunch of different executives around basketball about what they like about Cooper Flagg. It was a really glowing piece. And then it's like, oh, by the way, he's also stock up out of the first weekend because he came back from injury and was dominant. And it's like, we've almost kind of glossed over this since we had Scalabrine on, who's close with Cooper Flagg a couple months ago. But man, how excited are you to have a number one pick of that level and see what he can do at the next stage?
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, he exceeded my expectations coming into the year for sure. Like I had seen him in high school a few times, but I think you don't expect. Like I was looking at some of his advanced stuff the other day as we were putting that story together, and it's like he's right up there with Zion just in terms of his impact stuff. Like it's obviously not everything, but like, you know, those guys kind of crush the, you know, box plus minus or net rating and that type of thing, and which kind of catches at least some of the defensive impact. So that to me kind of says a lot. He's on the loftiest of freshman seasons with a lot of guys, you know, Zion, Anthony Davis, like talking about some of the best and most impactful guys. So I'm excited to see what he can do in the NBA. I think it's going to take a little time, maybe offensively, but I'm pretty sure he's going to win. I don't know where it's going to be, and you know, I don't know if he's going to be like the number one offensive option, but I'm pretty sure he's going
to
win a lot.
So you think if he goes to Washington, he's going to win a lot next year? Is that what you're saying? Can we quote you on that? Can we aggregate this?
Not immediately.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's a good,
but to your point to be, you know, he's supposed to be in high school this year to be at his age, making that huge of an impact at a place like Duke, who obviously brings in a ton of other talent in a conference like the ACC. You're going against guys maybe 5 years older than you with super seniors. I just learned that term today. I didn't know that's what they called the 5 year ones from COVID. I guess the last of them, right?
Yes, this is the last year with the extra eligibility.
The Last of Us, not to be confused with the TV show. It is amazing. I was a freshman once at the University of Florida, and I got my butt whooped for a year straight. So, like, it blows my mind, the impact he's having.
Jeremy, before we let you go here, so it is Sweet 16. All 16 teams are coming from the Power Four conferences. So whether you like that or not for the overall entertainment of the tournament, means we're headed for some pretty good matchups here. Is there a prospect or a couple of prospects that, you know, you are really focused on this weekend because you think they can show a little more, or you're curious about the matchup or anything like that? Like what's kind of the game to you in this Sweet 16 round?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Maryland is one of those teams for me, like with Derek.
Boo. Being playing a guy, the Gators.
You know, being a guy who, like, people have often critiqued for not playing hard enough. I mean, he is a pretty big opportunity. And, you know, Florida is a very tough defensive team, as you know. Like, I think if they can somehow, I don't even know if they need to win that game, but if he shows up in that game, I think that's pretty significant stage for him. I would say, you know, Yegor Demon also against Alabama, kind of the same thing, right? It's like a physical up-tempo matchup, and he's going to have to prove he can play at that speed. I think that's something teams will be watching for as well. So I think those two guys you know, have good opportunities. I'd like to see Jace Richardson from Michigan State have a better next round after sort of struggling in the last one. And you kind of want to see guys bounce back, right? Like, you can live with, especially freshmen, like you said, Matt, like it's tough. It's okay to have a bad game sometimes, but you want to see how guys respond to that. And so you've got a few days off to kind of, you know, cool it and come back and prep and see how these guys come into the next round.
Quick thumbs up, thumbs down. Joseph Tugler from Houston, is he going to be able to do enough offensively to be a second round pick, maybe a bench guy, or is he too small as a kind of undersized center?
I'm kind of a fan of him. I've been watching him for a couple of years. I saw him at USA Basketball. I don't know. I think he's pretty smart. I think he does a lot of things well defensively in spite of his size. I don't know if he will end up in the draft or not, but he's one of those guys who can make more in college. But I kind of think it's going to work. But to your point, yeah, like, you get these guys who don't space and don't really, like, add much besides catch and finish. It's, like, harder to like, prioritize those guys if you have a, like, you know, premium pick or whatever, right? But Shay, I'd be happy to take guys like that in the second round where it's more about, like, can you just find someone who's going to fill in the back end of your roster?
Yeah, certainly once you get to the undrafted as a two-way kind of tier of guy, a guy I'd kick the tires on for sure. Jeremy, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Keep up all the great work. It's indispensable always, but especially in a down year for the Raptors. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Jeremy Wu of ESPN. Make sure you're checking out all of his and Jonathan Givony's work over at ESPN. Again, they dropped a new top 100 board today with notes on who's rising, who's falling. We covered a good amount of ground.
I just want to point out that last sentence. He could make more by staying in college versus being a second-round NBA pick.
Yes.
That sentence is insane to me. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
That's but, wild.
I mean, you're not guaranteed money as a second-round pick in the NBA.
Get it, yeah. And if you get a minimum contract as a first few years in the league, it's well below $1 million. You can now make over $1 million in college.
Yeah.
So it's wild.
Yeah. Houston's a good enough program that, like, you're always going to be in the mix for a national champion or at least a good tournament run the way that they've kind of maintained a good – like, they lost Jamal Shedd, one of the best college players of the last couple of years, and they're still, like, right there. Still rolling.
Factory.
Yeah, and I think I'll win the pool if they win at all. So hopefully that keeps happening. Okay, there is NBA action tonight as well. We got a nice little doubleheader for you. Time now for Fast Break brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. We'll take a look at Warriors at Heat at 7:30. That's on Sportsnet 360. Thunder Kings at 10 o'clock is the back half of that doubleheader on Sportsnet 360. Taking a look at Warriors Heat because this is, of course, Jimmy Butler's return to Miami. Now, he says it's just another game. He also put a sign up at his coffee shop that if you're a Warriors employee, coffee costs you $30. So apparently it's even more expensive if you're a friend of Jimmy Butler. The Warriors are 5.5-point favorites in this one, over under set at 216.5. Steph Curry, who has been dealing with that pelvic contusion and the sore back, he is questionable for this one. On the Heat side, Duncan Robinson is questionable. Jovic and Drew Smith are out. Now, this is a Heat team that just snapped a 10-game losing streak. They did that against the Hornets, so it doesn't really count, but it at least made them 30-41. They're 10th in the East. They're game and a half back of Chicago now for 9th. Most importantly, for our purposes, they're 5.5 up on Toronto to avoid the play-in. They've lost 17 of 22. It's pretty bad. Golden State's gone the other direction with Jimmy. They're 15-2 when Steph and Jimmy play together, including 9-0 with the starting lineup that also includes Draymond Green, Moses Moody, and Brandon Pajemski, 16-4 in their last 20 overall, and they are a game up clear of the play-in, which is obviously a goal for them. That was Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Thanks to Garrett Temple for joining us and to Jeremy Wu. Thanks to Amit Mann, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Matt, no game for you tonight. I know you're sleepy, man. Get some rest.
You know what I haven't had in a while? Big League Chew.
There you go. There you go. Family Guy Matt Bonner over here. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll set you up for Raptors Nets. We'll talk a bunch of other stuff as well. Have a wonderful Tuesday.